We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we record and pay our respects to their elders past and present. We recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture.
The New Script is a podcast created for educational and awareness-raising purposes only. The conversations you'll hear are not intended as medical advice. Please speak with a qualified healthcare professional for any personal medical concerns or decisions.
Right now, we only know maybe 50% of the puzzle because we only study male physiology. So there's questions that we don't know right now, like, for example, why are women more prone to autoimmune disease and men more prone to autism? We don't know. We know that's what statistically it says. We know it could be because of gender or sex, or it could be because of hormones, etc., etc. But because we haven't studied that other 50%, we cannot help either to have better outcomes. Working in women's health is talking about gender parity and creating enough data and education and information and therapeutics and outcomes for both genders from a social and from a healthcare perspective.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to The New Script, the podcast where we uncover innovations, advances, and technology transforming women's health. I'm Mackenzie.
And I'm Fran. In this episode, we talked with Myra Hurtado, founder of Hormone, about her journey into women's health, why hormones have been overlooked, and how Hormone is changing that.
Yeah, it was a really interesting conversation with Myra to talk about not only like menopause as one point in time, but everything that happens around that, from perimenopause right through to life after menopause, and how data is really shifting the way we work with our health at that point in time. So we hope you all enjoy. Dive right in.
You're listening to a Day1.fm show.
Today, we are so pleased to welcome Myra Hurtado, a powerhouse blending two decades of global business leadership with a personal mission to transform women's health. She's held senior roles at Adidas Southeast Asia, led global marketing in biotech, and now heads Prelude Health, a Singapore-based startup tackling hormonal health with their flagship product, Hormone, the first rapid at-home saliva hormone test for women navigating perimenopause. Co-founded with Dr. Sarita Kumble, Prelude Health is now gaining global recognition across Asia, the UK, Europe, and the US. Myra brings not only a wealth of experience, but also deep purpose to her work, believing every woman deserves to feel well and thrive at every stage of life. Myra, that's our version of your bio, but how would you describe yourself in your own words?
Good question. I think what I would say is that I'm, first of all, very curious, deeply passionate about holistic health, and very interested in bringing back to the community all the amazing blessings I have through my life. So I would keep it actually quite simple.
Amazing. And well, let's take it back then to where it all began, because we would really like to know, how did Hormone start? Was there an idea at the beginning that really sparked and kicked things off? Where did you begin?
Well, it was a few years ago. I actually didn't know it was starting. Now, thinking back, I think that it was a series of events that connected through my career, everything from being interested in understanding holistic wellness, my family's own healthcare journey, until eventually, I guess, the point of time where everything came together is when I was maybe in my late 30s, at the peak of my career, working for a fantastic brand, having a fantastic team, and still having a bit of issues with my health, where I was tired all the time, I had trouble sleeping. And, you know, one of the amazing things is that in Singapore, where I am based, we had access to all kinds of doctors. So I saw them all. I even, in fact, had an MRI at some point because I had migraines. And I just couldn't nail it until it was one nutritionist that basically spent the time to understand it, run through my whole medical history, and sent me to do a lab test. And that's kind of where I realized, after she explained to me what hormones are and she made a plan for me, I realized what the potential could be. Eventually, I met Dr. Kumble, and when we started talking about her experience and my experience through our own journey, you know, I did what every marketing people do. We go and do a business plan. We do our market research. We start talking to possible consumers. We get into the data. And to me, the data was just so clear. There was a huge gap. There was a huge need. And there were women ready to embrace any solution. And they were already spending so much money on it. But still, we didn't have a proper way to support them. And that's exactly the point of time where we realized that aside from the gap, this gap brought tremendous opportunity, and we are at the right point of time where technology was finally mature enough to create this solution. And yeah, and that's how Hormony was born. And it's a whole different story after that.
Amazing. We can't wait to delve more into it. I'm curious, Maya, why do you think we're just starting to look at hormones now? Can you help us understand how this area of women's health has been treated in the past or historically?
It has been a progression. Or when I mention it, I mean, it was a shocking data for me, and people usually get shocked when I talk about it. But it wasn't until 1993, 1996 that women were included in medical research, which meant that before that, most of research has been done either on just men or male mice or male cells, which meant that most of the medicines that we are currently taking at this day and age has never been studied in women. Obviously, that brings a series of problems, like 8 out of 10 medicines that get taken out of the market is because they were most harmful for women. And, you know, I can make a whole list. And I guess to go back to your question, part of it is that we just did not know. It was historically done like that. It was what we had accessible in terms of technology. So yeah, a series of conditions that came together and created this problem. The great news is that, again, along with the technology, we have a lot more people, including a lot more women in this field, that are now interested in solving a problem that they're living through. So it's like the perfect product market fit. You have a problem, and then you have the consumer looking for a solution to solve their own problems. And this means that in the last few years, this industry has accelerated dramatically. And also we have a lot of people that are not necessarily scientists looking into this space, like me, for example, and also men that are part of making a difference in the space.
I'm really eager to hear more about what Hormony does. But before we do, I wanted to ask one question for all our listeners who might not know a little bit about perimenopause and menopause. So could you take us through those two elements of a women's health journey and how hormones are impacted by those stages of life?
Yes, and to be very honest, this was a learning experience for me. Menopause was never a topic that was discussed either at school or at home. It's just, it was a taboo. And my mother never really spoke about it until now. When I bring it up, they're like, oh yeah, I had that. Let's start by this. One shocking fact is that menopause is one day in a woman's life, but we only know it 12 months after it happened. So until a woman hasn't had her period for 12 months, then she can officially say that probably she's in post-menopause and her menopause date was 12 months ago. So the really interesting part and where we can make the most impact in a woman's health is between 7 to 15 years before that day, when we start seeing changes in little changes. It can start with little things like maybe our skin could be changing, our hair could be changing. It could be our weight could start fluctuating, and then it starts progressing into sometimes maybe more, let's say, dramatic symptoms like hot flashes, which is the most common, or maybe other problems in your digestive system. So anyway, there's like over 30 different symptoms. The way I would explain the symptoms is that during this time, our body is going a transformation, moving from a stage of fertility to a new stage where a woman is preparing to be what I call the Master Yoda of the generation, where her role is more about guiding the new generations, teaching the new generations, building community. And as such, the body has to adjust. But going through this adjustment, and because of our lifestyle and the environment, that kind of throws off our body and that starts throwing off our hormones. We have also over 30 different hormones, and they all work like a cocktail, you know, like a melody where you need to have different musical notes all playing in harmony for them to have a good tune. And when one of these is out of tune, then it starts throwing off all the other in the melody. And that starts making, let's say, symptoms or alarm bells. And the issue is not that. The issue is that if we don't listen to when our body is going out of tune or is having these symptoms, later on, the song starts to become very awful. And in our case, it's when we start having or heading to chronic disease. So what is really, really important in this age, especially now we talk about longevity or we talk about actual healthcare and prevention rather than sick care, is to really listen to our bodies and try to figure out what is telling us so we can address it and have healthier aging.
Amazing, Myra. And actually, I love that story you just told. Is that why it's called Harmony? Because it's about your hormones being in harmony. I just got it. Amazing. Amazing. I'm glad I was able to make the connection. Can you walk us through what Harmony does and how your solution is uniquely positioned to solve the problem it's solving? And run us through how it works in practice.
When we're looking at this harmony of music, what we wanted to, well, because there's over 30 different symptoms and we have over 30 different hormones, specifically we're looking at the female hormones, or what we call female hormones, which is estrogen, progesterone, but also testosterone, LH and FSH, and cortisol. We need to understand which ones of this is going out of tune to understand which one is causing each symptom. Usually when you go to a doctor, what happens is that they will ask you a series of questions and you depend a lot on that doctor having the expertise and you knowing what to answer. So if a doctor never asked me about my headaches, I would have never mentioned it because I probably never thought that was relevant. So the first thing is we want to create awareness. I think women, we need to become more educated on our bodies. And also we need to be responsible of our own health, not leave it on the hands of someone else. And then in addition to that, what we do is based on rapid saliva at-home test, we can pinpoint which are the hormones that might be moving out of syntony. And on the basis of that, do what my nutritionist did, except now using technology to prepare a personal plan with nutrition, supplementation, and exercise that can help women go through this transition and not feel alone through the process.
And so you're leveraging a lot of data points then to provide insights to your customers and users. So what elements do they have to do outside of the use of Harmony? Are they going to their nutritionists and then seeking that advice? Are they, you know, changing their exercise plans? What are some of the changes that they're going to be making on a day-to-day level with these insights?
Yeah, that's a really important point. You know, the thing is that often when we go to the doctors, they will tell us, eat well, sleep more, exercise more. And that's a bit challenging because, first of all, what does that mean? What is eat well? Because it means something different for every person. Sleep more. Hey, if it was that easy, I wouldn't be here. You know, it's not like I just go to bed and then I fall asleep. Exercise more. Right, but I'm tired all the time because I cannot sleep at night. So first of all, is understanding what are the things that we can use naturally from nutrition or even lifestyle changes. Like, for example, I need to make sure that my meal is not much later than X hours before I go to bed, or potentially I need to introduce certain supplements, or I need to stop certain type of food altogether, depending of my needs. So that's the first part, to create a plan that is designed for you. The second part is sustaining the plan, because adopting a new lifestyle change or a new way of life, it can take up to 180 days. So just because if I have a plan doesn't mean that I'm going to stick to it. So the next thing we do is have this kind of like guide that holds your hand through the process and gives you reminders and nudges on what is next and what is for today. I think one thing that often is overlooked when we are giving women recommendations is that women are very busy. We have families, we take care of our parents, we take care of our kids, our partners, our work. So if you're going to ask me to make a meal plan, but my meal plan is going to be different than my family's meal plan, that's extra work that you're giving me.
Mm.
So I think we need to understand very well what the lifestyle of that woman is and adjust as much as possible to that as we go along the process. So for that, we use, well, first of all, understanding the user, but secondly, cognitive behavior theory and as simple as tiny habits, day by day, one additional tiny habit.
So fascinating to hear about all this information and the wealth of knowledge that you have. We'd love to ask you now about your life as a founder and the lessons you've learned. I understand you've come from a clinical background, so we'd love to know, what's it been like stepping into the founder role?
So my background is in marketing and business, basically. So I'm actually trained in operations, finance, and product development. For me, what has been really interesting is to learn about the scientific side to that. And what really helps to that, obviously, aside from studying, is we have a really good team. So my three partners, Dr. Kumble has a start, my co-founder, she's a biochemist by training. She has a postdoc from Stanford. Her previous business, she built an ELISA machine, small machine in her garage in New Zealand, and eventually built a company with her husband based in New Zealand. The company is over 20 years old by now. So that was the first thing that she did. Then my other partner, he's a former athlete, has been working with saliva testing also for a couple of decades. And finally, our CTO, who's just joined, his expertise is in data visualization, behavioral economics, behavioral science, building health programs for sustainable change. So I think what really has helped as a founder is to have a very diverse team that you can fall back onto. And everybody has a very clear role on what we're bringing to the table.
Absolutely. And I mean, with such a diverse team, it sounds like you do have a great set of skills across what you're building. So me and Fran are based in Australia. You're based in Singapore, but I know also you spent some time in Mexico as well, where you're from originally. And then you've just also mentioned Dr. Kumble has done a lot in New Zealand. So you're starting from a global position already as a team. So what kind of markets are you targeting? How do you kind of build this team to operate globally?
Right. I think one of the advantages of the post-COVID world, if you would, is that you have access to the best brains across the world. And now we're very used to of doing things like this, where we can talk literally across the pond. That gave us access to do it. It is challenging in the sense that the time zones are strange, but it's also a great opportunity. I think that, well, working across all these geographies also has allowed us to understand, first of all, the needs by geography. And the most important thing that we understood is that this whole situation about the gap in women's health is universal.
Mm.
There is countries that are ahead, probably like the UK, in the sense that they're already looking at how to solve it. Australia as well, by the way. You've been really, really working hard the last few years and developed some good initiatives. But at the end of the day, the need is universal because women's needs are universal. So as a first step, we're covering Asia. So we're looking at launching soon in Asia. Eventually, we're also looking at Mexico as the next market, hence why I came here. We have a huge opportunity opening up here. And we also obviously see opportunities in other places like North America, Europe. Especially interesting places where remote care is hard to, or where care is hard to access, and that's when remote care becomes more relevant.
Wow, that sounds like an incredible journey ahead. We're so excited for you. And speaking of journeys, we'd love to touch on the capital raising journey. As a founder of a women's health company, what has that experience like been for you?
From my perspective, I think that there is, I mean, statistically, I'll talk statistically, the numbers say that female founders raise, in women's health, they raise about 2 to 3% of capital. It has been changing. So there is clearly a opportunity there to improve it, especially considering that this is all statistics, so it's all published, it's not me saying it. Statistically, they have better rates of success. That, like we were talking about product market fit, we tend to build great communities that follow our products. So I think there's a huge opportunity to put more money here if we want real returns, not only from the side of economic returns, but also social returns. And I mean, it was last year where the World Economic Forum mentioned that for every $1 that we invest in women's health, we get $3 back into the economy. So, I mean, statistically, it just makes sense. Me personally, I think the biggest challenge is that what I've seen also from my cohort of femtech founders is that many of these companies don't necessarily fit the checklist that traditional venture capital looks like, because sometimes our clinical developments that take time. Sometimes there are products that are in between medical but consumer focus. So is it one or the other? Or sometimes the development times, yeah, maybe too long or maybe too short. So all sorts of combinations, I would say. Me personally, what has worked very well is that we have built a community of supporters. Initially, a lot of women, because women understand the need and they're like, yeah, I've been through that. And every time you share the story, there's always someone that will tell you, oh yeah, by the way, this is mine. And they get interested. So we got a lot of those kind of supports. But also there's a lot of men that have become interested in the project and they have supported us as angel investment.
That's incredible, Myra, to hear the support that you're getting. And thank you for sharing so openly about your journey. We definitely are familiar with the dire statistics around the funding gap around women, founders specifically. But I love that you're sharing these wonderful statistics with the audience. We definitely know that women-led startups perform 63% better than their male counterparts. That was in a report done by First Round Capital. And we also know that founding teams that are ethnically diverse outperform, again, their counterparts by 30%, according to the Kauffman Fellows Research Center. And there are so many more statistics around that. So I love that you're sharing them with us here and educating the listeners in the incredible opportunity that is women-led founders. So amazing.
You have it like in the tip of your hands. That's so good.
One question I had, Myra, following off that note, is you mentioned the community of supporters. And so I'm curious about that community piece, particularly around hormone health and female health in general. Are you finding you have to educate investors that you bring on board? And also, is there an education component as well for the community that you're serving? So educating women who are either kind of perimenopausal or starting to, you know, recognize all these symptoms that are popping up. How does Hormoni approach that education piece on both ends, investors and then general users as well?
Right. So when we initially started about 3 years ago, it was very challenging because, first of all, it's a word that usually we don't hear much of. And then when we do hear about it, it just sounds so scary. So it was really a huge effort in education. The last year has been fantastic. If you go to Google Trends and you search for menopause or perimenopause, you see that there's a 4-time increase in search. A lot of this has been driven by famous personalities that talked about it. The first menopause documentary, which, by the way, for those healthcare providers that watch the documentary, they get continuous education credits. So that has been huge. So that has helped a lot to move the needle. So I think it's very much, going back to your question, it's a community effort of more and more people talking openly about it and scientifically about it also, no more like myths around it. For us particularly, it's our turn to get into the granularity of what that means. So yes, now we're more educated. Now we know perimenopause is coming. Now it's demystified, but how do we address it? What are the things that are scientifically proven and what are not? And that's where Hormoni would come in, where we use actual science data from the public knowledge, but also from your own body with your own biomarkers.
That's so fascinating. I'm percolating and digesting all this good information. And while we're on the topic of your founder journey, Myra, I'd love to ask a bit of a juicy question, which is, what is your favorite failure, or what's something that didn't go to plan but taught you something incredibly invaluable?
Oh, I feel like this the founder journey is a constant up and down. I mean, just anything from many times where I've been to a pitch, I'm like, dang, that was not the best way to explain it. Or that product feature maybe was not the right time. Maybe that contract should have been drafted differently. So I just feel like there's no one thing, but there's many learnings. Also, what I've learned is that, and this is very specific, when being a founder, because you encounter so many of this, that what you learn is that it's not really failures, they're like redirections, where you try one thing, didn't work, immediately you change to the other, and then you keep trying and keep changing the tune. And each one of those are like data points that you start taking into your brain computer and start then making new calculations. That not to say that it's hard. I mean, from things that are very visible when you go pitch in a very public space and you don't necessarily get the results that you want, that's, you could say, a very public failure and maybe a little bit of a heartbreak. And at the same time, it's interesting because even those moments, there were opportunities where we talked about the topic, we might have educated new people about it, we might have made space for the conversation to happen, and it somehow it comes back to us in a way or another. I see it now more, rather than failure, more like redirections.
Yeah, I love that. You're listening to the feedback that you're getting. I feel like I could adopt some more redirection language in my work on a day-to-day basis, especially if their failures come up. Myra, I'm wondering, what's your number one thing, like your non-negotiable thing that you always do that you won't compromise on for your health?
I always compromise. This is horrible. But I think I would say two things. Sleep. I realize that if I don't have a good sleep, I break down. I will definitely break down. And the other thing is I really try to make space for mental health connection, mental body connection, in the sense that at the very, very least, have a gratitude moment throughout the day and a start of the day, just to kind of realign. And the second thing is I try to write a journal, questions, and just stop. So this is not to say that I do it well, but it is something, it has helped so much. And I would recommend everyone to spend time. In fact, there's a program I did in Sydney by coincidence, well, in Byron Bay, by coincidence, when I started this journey. It's called Hoffman Process. And honestly, that system has been one of the frameworks or like foundations that had really helped me manage what means to be a founder. So
that's fantastic. Well, I love that. And I'll definitely be going to look that up afterwards.
Thank you for sharing, Myra. I know that was a tricky question because what we say versus what we do sometimes. But as you said, you know, the juggle is real. The juggle is real.
Do as I say, don't do as I do.
And we've talked about so many different topics today. We've covered quite a real variety. I'd love to know, in your field, what's something people aren't talking about enough?
I think exactly that, mental health. It's just so connected. On one side, hormones are connected to so many parts of our body. They absolutely impact our mental health. And I mean, my background, I've studied a lot of holistic health and psychology as well. So I'm a meditation teacher and yoga teacher. So to me, when somebody is going through health issues, we need to address at every level, obviously the physical level, but also the mental level, the mental side of it, in the sense that you cannot tell just someone, oh, go to a psychologist or go to therapy, and you're not taking care of the body. Or you cannot take care of the body and then say, hey, you need to go get go talk to someone that can help you go through it. So I think that holistic part is not talked about. And now I see it also from a hormone perspective. And at the same time, going back to being a founder, I think more founders need to be open about the fact that it's really difficult to put yourself through so many rejections or just the pressure or knowing that you need to make sure that your team has their salary covers, etc. I mean, there's so many different scenarios for founders that they go through, and they rarely talk about it and about what it means to take care of their mental health. I think female founders were a lot more open. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about women's health founders or femtech founders, that our community tends to be very connected and we talk to each other and we help each other a lot. And I just hope that every founder could find a community like that to support their mental health. And that will make them so much more effective in leading our team.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing. We're heading into our last few questions, but before we do and ask our signature question, I want to ask, why is your work so important, not just for women, but for the healthcare system as a whole?
Going back to the statistics from the World Economic Forum, is that women are such an integral part of the economy and society that having healthy women is a no-brainer for us to be better societies. I think we established that. The other thing that we really need to understand as well is that there's, right now, we only know maybe 50% of the puzzle because we only study male physiology. So there's questions that we don't know right now. Like, for example, why are women more prone to autoimmune disease and men more prone to autism? We don't know. We know that's what statistically it says. We know it could be because of gender or sex, or it could be because of hormones, et cetera, et cetera. But because we haven't studied the other 50%, we cannot help either to have better outcomes. Or a great example is we often think about women being the ones that get breast cancer, but men can get breast cancer. And actually, they have worse outcomes because they're not aware, we're not prepared for it, and they tend to find out much later. So I think a lot about working in women's health is talking about gender parity in health and making and creating enough data and education and information and therapeutics and outcomes for both genders from a social and from a healthcare perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And that's definitely what we want to see more of, especially like more research funding going towards women health, which in turn will benefit all in the long run.
Amazing, Myra. You just dropped so many incredible pearls of wisdom, nuggets of gold, and I think information bombshells on people who are not aware of the impact that innovations like yours have on society as a whole, because I think that it's been underserved for so long. And as you say, this
moment and hopefully momentum that's created by the growing amount of data and information is going to get us close to that gender parity and equality of availability of service and positive outcomes for everyone.
Right.
So thank you. Thank you so much for the work that you do. We're really excited to hear more about the trajectory and future plans that you have for Hormoni. What are you most excited about in the next 12 months? What does that look like?
You know, when we have opened our website and we get comments there, and sometimes I go back and read them, and one of the, we have all kinds, but there's some that are along the line of, I've been struggling, I need help. What I really am looking forward to and cannot wait for is to be able to deliver test kits to women, and they can at the very least get some sort of sense that they are seen. That's my minimum, very minimum. And what we ultimately want to make sure is that every woman around the world can understand their body better and have the tools to reconnect with it and get back in tune.
Absolutely. Those insights are so crucial and validating as well. Like, you're not going crazy. You're not just sweating for no reason, right? You're actually going through something that's happening to your body. It's not just all in your mind.
That's it.
Well, we have one final signature question. So if you could rewrite the script on women's health, what would be one thing that you would change?
I think I would like women to get information about, women and men, information about the female body much earlier in their life. So the same way we teach little girls to that they're going to have their period and they can get pregnant, I think we should teach them about the every stage of their life's journey, the beauty of it, and also teach men so when they're going through these stages, they can have better understanding of themselves and also the other person and have better communication and maybe be better connected to themselves and to others. So that's the one thing I think, and it's not a hard one. I mean, this is something, this is an easy one to do. So I think that is a dream for women's health.
Absolutely. If we all knew kind of what was ahead, rather than just if you have sex, you'll get pregnant and that's the end of the world. As a young, you know, person to be told that's quite confronting. But if you could actually see the full cycle of what it would be, what it is to be a woman and how that changes over time. That's very empowering and from an early age.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Well, Myra, thank you so much for taking the time out of your very busy, hectic, full of juggles day to be here with us and share your wisdom and the amazing work that you're doing. Mackenzie and I are so grateful to you for joining our podcast, The New Script. And thank you again.
Thank you. I just want to say one last thing. It's because of platforms like this and people like you that we're able to get the message out there. So we are very, very grateful for this space and we're very grateful for your time. So thank you for having me.
Thanks, Myra, so much. We appreciate it. We loved having you on for the conversation.
Thanks for listening to The New Script. If you enjoyed the episode, make sure to follow or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review if you're feeling generous.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, or guest suggestions. Drop us a line at hello@thenewscriptpodcast.com.
This podcast was proudly produced by Day One, the podcast network for founders, operators, and investors. Learn more at dayone.fm. Until then, keep rewriting the script.